The Irish for 100 is Caird. It's also the Irish for first. So in a way, today is a special day because it is our 100th episode.
Yay! Woo!
Headstuff Studios in Dublin, welcome to Motherfucklore, a podcast about words.
Irish.
Irish words.
And words from Ireland. I'm Derek O'Shea.
I'm Clodagh McGinley.
And I'm Pat O'Connor.
You're all very welcome today. We're having a little bit of a party here in the Headstuff Studios.
And yet you've only served water.
Listen, just because we've reached 100 episodes doesn't mean I'm not a cheap fucker.
I thought you were going to throw in like drink responsibly or something like that.
Never.
This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Irish Water.
Friends at Irish Water. They're not as bad as that.
Use discount code MOFO and you won't have to pay your water charges.
Not a discount card.
Please keep that in.
So, what we thought that, you know, I mean, we'd start off today before we are going to look at some of the correspondence. We received some congratulatory and cautionary correspondence from our listeners to set the tone. Before that, we just want to talk about the journey to getting to 100. Clodagh, how have you found your motherfucklore journey?
It's been pretty fantastic. I mean, I was a latecomer, as we all know, or at least I know I was a latecomer. I only started in November 2017, I want to say, and the show started in August 2017, I think. But yeah, it's been really, really amazing to see the show grow. It really, really has. It's gone from strength to strength. Cliche. I know, in all seriousness, it's great to be a part of something so special and unique. And I feel like we've actually done quite a good job, not to toot our own horns, of building a bridge for the Irish language. Not putting it lightly, in terms of people who really do love Irish but they're still terrified of it, or, you know, they have a really big interest in it and they didn't know where to start, and then Motherfucklore came along, and yeah,
it's been a fun part of that, creating space wasn't there before. Pat, how's your Motherfucklore journey been?
Well, as you know, I'm doing this as part of my community service, so just 100 more episodes and I'm free. I know, it's been brilliant. It's been a fantastic experience. It's great to see something that's enjoyed by so many people around the world. And you know, it's a testament to you, Derek. Like, you started this initially, of course, to cynically flog books, but I think it's grown. I think it's grown beyond that because, you know, you've already extended the house and bought the new car, and you know, you've taken your four foreign holidays. So, like, the book sales are grand; they're taking over. You're just doing the podcast now out of the love of it, and I think that's great. That sort of that altruistic streak in you know, it's commendable.
Absolutely, I live to give, and you know, and it's just been a wonderful level of engagement to actually to find people haven't gotten in touch to say how much they've enjoyed the show, to have people talk about that online and offline, or about the things that have been mentioned between the actual podcast itself and the various associated projects. And we especially love meeting people at live shows. So if we are going to be doing some live shows this autumn. You'll hear more about that later.
Yeah, can't wait. Cork Podcast Festival, yeah!
Cork Podcast, bye! Yes, it's going to be wonderful.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot then, Derek. What is your top Motherfucklore memory from the first 99 episodes?
From the first 99 episodes, I think if I was going to pick like one particular Motherfucklore memory, I have to say it was our live show in the Sugar Club. I felt like we really arrived. I felt there was a real rock star energy in the room. The engagement we got from the crowd, there was so much excitement about the presidential election. It was a real buzzing moment. I'd also say possibly we did a live show the night before the referendum on the Eighth Amendment. We went into, myself and Emer went into this room in Smock Alley Theatre in Dublin. And it was like, I thought it was, you know, the way at a football match, everyone's wearing the same jersey. It was just repeal jumpers all across the room.
The official Motherfuckler replica kit.
there was so much energy at the moment. I think Garagine was flat out in leash with exhaustion. And Patter was attending to the arrival of a new tiny little motherfucker. Oh,
no, the day before the I was canvassing. I was out canvassing the day before the referendum.
Before
the,
you were rudely interrupted by your son.
Before I was rudely interrupted by the arrival of my baby boy. Yeah. How inconvenient.
You'll listen to this in 20 years' time and be like, really?
Really, Dad? Thanks, Dad.
I know my place.
But I think the live shows were those particular live shows in general were moments where I really felt that there was an energy in Ireland. Ireland was changing and Mother Folklore was a small part of it. And we were just there and the Irish language was there and the actual Irish people there. And I felt it was just nice to be kind of flowing along the same groove.
Yeah. Claudia, what was yours?
I'm going to be really egotistical and say, no, it was all about me. No. No,
good episode.
I think my favourite memory, I really enjoyed the Conor O'Regan episode, I have to say, the baby names one. It was a lot of fun to listen to. Yeah, it was just, and there was a really nice atmosphere that day, I feel. And it was just, yeah, it was a really, really nice time, I feel. But I mean, it's like that, like, you know, I hope it comes across through the recordings too, that like, you know, there is such a good atmosphere when we are recording, you know, and it's a really pleasant place to come, you know, and I feel like we all do really enjoy it. So, you know, yeah, it's really nice. Really nice to meet nice people.
It is.
That's my favourite memory. That is my favourite memory.
Excellent.
Yeah.
How about you, Pops?
It's tough. It's tough to choose. I'm down to two. And while you were attending to the birth of your own special bundle of joy, a few of us filled in the hot seat for you. And in order to sort of carry the podcast without your guiding hand, we relied on a stellar set of guests. They were really, really spectacular, and they really helped lift the show at a time when the energy could have flagged because you weren't around. And it's really hard to pick one of them. Leashuk Ní Cuasla was amazing talking about the Queer Dictionary and Folklore Atuk. Brianna Perkins, she was so brilliant. She was so warm and engaging and funny. And, you know, you don't often get to interview, a former Rose. It was a lot of fun. And the Aussie slang stuff was brilliant. But my favourite was probably Máirtín Mac an Umrah. We came in and talked about the Irish history of food. And, you know, we got to talk about coddle. Garadine was in the room with us, and she was not too keen on coddle at that stage, but she has since jetted off to Finland and she's tried the Finnish version of coddle, and I think she's a convert, and when she comes back we're going to have to cook her up a big pot of coddle and see if she can handle the Dublin version.
I've agreed with Tony Groves, who is another podcaster and who I see was another coddle advocate, that
I believe we're called coddle acolytes.
That he can live stream me eating a bowl of coddle, because I haven't had it in so many years, that he, if my reaction is disgust, he gets the pleasure of looking at that. And if my reaction is enjoyment, he gets the satisfaction of beating me in the argument. So it's a no-lose situation.
I think that's brilliant. We'll all go up the Diggers and have a rake of pints and a big bowl of coddle. Be superb.
God, I'd love to be in the Diggers now. So, we couldn't fit the rest of the gang in the studio today, but I mean, they all send you, our beloved listeners, their best wishes. And without further ado, I want to hear some correspondence from our listeners who have sent in some inquiries, questions, and general remarks about the show. Welcome to Mailbag 5, episode 100.
Acharte. A year ago today, a friend of mine tagged at the Irish Four into a tweet conversation we were having as I'd been playing around with Google Translate and sending them its funny translations. That night, I downloaded Motherfuckler's first few episodes. From the moment I heard Garadine's rant about the letter V, I was hooked. I reset the progress data on Duolingo for my Irish course and started again from scratch. The previous attempt I had made to learn our native language was a disaster. None of the words were going in. I had no reference point for them. But after discovering the podcast and the Twitter account, it was like this secret society on Twitter suddenly became visible to me. Within a few weeks, I was able to read more of the tweets from me. I took on someone's, Oscar's I think, to watch some kids' shows, Os Gaeilge. By December, I got to the point where I needed more structure. And from Conor na Gaeilge, I found a teacher whom I have been having lessons from since January. I've written a few short pieces, Os Gaeilge. Started progressing through books, from toddler books through to now on the 5 to 8 age books, and had a bit of a problem spending money out on Siopa Leabhar. I've used some Irish with my dad, who has always claimed to have none, but one, he corrected me on one bit, and two, he was responding in English to what I was saying, and seriously, I was so proud to have had that interaction with him. Every one of your contributors have helped in some way or another through social media, and sometimes your guests too. I look forward to Friday so much to hear more Focal, Gaelge, Focal Gaelge, agus Focal de Héireann. Lamas, James.
James, thank you so much. It's just that's an absolutely lovely message to receive, and I'm just delighted that we helped you along your way.
Yeah, it's lovely. That's really nice.
It really is. Really,
I mean, I'm a bit disappointed that it was Gardine's rant about the letter V started it, because V has a valid place in the Irish language and always has, but we'll park that one for another day.
B-H-A-L-I-G.
I would be honest with you, we have all at one stage gone through that problem of spending money at Unshuffle Hour. It is, it's such an easy place to just part with your week's wages in.
Very true.
Just got to walk in there and make it rain.
Just spreading the Benjamins. Grania's wondering why I'm throwing notes at her head. It's like,
Fonia's made out of solid gold and everything.
With the diamante pins.
Absolutely. Walking out with a solid gold cork over my head.
Not sure they sell boats in Japan.
Yeah, sure, look it.
Sure, look it.
So thank you very much, James. And our next message is coming from Mindy.
Hi, guys. I sent this to you via Facebook Messenger, but wasn't sure if that was the best way to go, so I decided to email it to you as well. Sorry for the repeat if you've already received it. I purchased Mother Folklore when it came out, and I love it. I just started listening to the podcast a couple of months ago. Fantastic stuff. So I have a question about the best programs to learn Irish. Forgive me for the length here. I am from Arizona and now live in Memphis, Tennessee, where there is a small Irish-American community that is wanting to do some Irish lessons. I studied Irish for several years in my undergrad at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Tucson, Arizona, and then some Old Irish and Modern Irish in my graduate program at Catholic University of American in Washington, D.C., but that was 19 years ago. I have been passively collecting Irish language things since then, such as your book and Our Father, anything that anyone from the band Keeler writes, even Goshkind, when my kids were little, in hope that I would get back into it, but it hasn't worked out very well. I have De Valderha and O'Donnell, Dinian and Fuclorbjog, and several others. In my undergrad, we used Buntu's Kaintia, probably because it was a critical language program, meaning that we just had a native speaker as a teacher. So they were looking for something simple. We had to do oral midterms and finals with a professor of Irish that they would fly in for the occasion. Terrifying. That is terrifying, my God. In short, my Irish is terrible, considering how long I studied it, but above basic. Do you have any suggestions on programs to teach new learners with? Although I love Buntu's counter for things like Colwell Sean, with the drawing of a little kid under the table smoking, it isn't really laid out to teach pronunciation of written Irish and such. Duolingo seems great for vocabulary, but again, not for reading and writing so much. Same with progress in Irish, Ní Gaoithre. I suppose I'm desirous of grammar and pronunciation rules because my undergrad degree is in linguistics and I've always been better at the puzzle aspect of languages, trying to figure them out rather than speaking them. My conversational Irish was always shite. I'm like a deer in the headlights. Anyway, any and all suggestions would be greatly appreciated. And if you've answered this on one of your podcasts, just point me to it. I've started from the beginning, so I'm far up to date with all of your episodes. Gurv Mila Matagwiv Slán Mindy. P.S. Just listened to the Tán and Crainicilla episodes and immediately ordered on Tán graphic novel. I already have the Irish version and Kinsella's, and both the translations of Crainicilla from Unshuffle Hour. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mindy.
Yeah, thanks, Mindy. Great choice, by the way. The Tán graphic novel rocks. It's absolutely class. There's a brilliant resource available completely free online from DCU. There's an entry level Irish course. It's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. And it goes a little bit beyond just the reading and the writing. It does get into the grammar and it gets into the structure of the language. It gets into the socioeconomic picture behind the Irish language as well. I don't know if it would be advanced enough for many, but it's free and it's 6 weeks long and it's all online, so it's well worth doing. So that's available through DCU's online platforms. Duolingo is great for vocabulary, but if you want to help with the reading and the writing of Yon Help, the best thing to do is to join a classroom like Emer's, if there is space, because it's obviously in huge demand.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I cannot speak highly enough of like the work Cunor na Gaeilge are doing all around the world in all of their Craivachí Áitiúla to run Irish language classes. And they will go a little bit, if the demand is there, they'll go a little bit beyond the basic conversational. Although it seems like, Mindy, like, I mean, definitely, if you're enjoying this at the level that you are, you've got a good handle on it, and maybe it's time to steer towards the conversational Irish and try and avoid that deer in the headlights feeling.
Yeah, I think I think the big thing here is it seems to me that Mindy has a lot of knowledge and a lot of interest in Irish. And while she says that her Irish isn't good, it's important, first of all, go easy on yourself. It seems that she's gotten a lot further than a lot of people have done, particularly with them, as with the access that might be available in Arizona. But I'd say possibly it's important to ask yourself what do you want Irish for? Set little goals for yourself and make it forward that way. I mean, what I think that while we want to encourage to continue going forward, it'd be good to ask yourself like what you want from Irish, whether it's more conversation or deeper reading, and approach it that way, because I don't think it's right from what you're saying.
Exactly. You know more than Ida going into college, really and truly. Like, you know, the knowledge is there, but it is about avoiding that deer in the headlights feeling, and that's something that comes with practice, which is both fortunate and unfortunate. Because, I mean, it's fortunate in the sense that it's always fun, I guess, to practice your Irish in an informal setting, but unfortunate if you are feeling a bit underconfident and all that jazz. But you will get there, you know, you will get there.
Yeah, go to a pub of Gaeltacht, because, like, drink helps.
True.
It really does. Like, you just don't care about your mistakes when you've had 5 pints.
Absolutely not. Thank you, Mindy. Our next message is from Jessica. The sound Garagine made during the Ed Walsh bit in the Hot Gale Summer episode made me laugh so hard that I choked and the chicken salad I was eating came out my nose. So, thanks for that. I'm American, I had no idea who Eamon de Valera was. I did some research, I read his Wikipedia page, and now I've learned something I didn't know before. So thank you for that. I find the podcast endlessly rewarding.
Endlessly rewarding is brilliant, considering how that one started. And I thought we were going to face a compensation claim for a new chicken salad, because this one's ruined. It's got nose all over it. Like,
that's no mean feat. Like, I mean, that's like a proper.
I'm trying to work out the physics of it. Like, what part of the chicken was it? Like,
yeah.
White meat or dark meat?
This is growing like very, very graphic.
It's like a whole leg.
Was it a crouton? That would be painful.
Jesus. Yeah.
Well, our thoughts are with you, Jessica. I hope you recover from your crouton-related injury before too long. Oh, that's nice. It is nice that, like, you know, when you mention something, we it's so ingrained in our society now. If you do Junior South History, you know who Eamon de Valera is, and you have some idea of his role, or at least how he's portrayed, and Garradine will tell you that that's wrong and you should re-examine that. But like, obviously this is a podcast that's picked up all around the world. We've got people listening in loads of countries across all the continents, and you know, not a lot of people know who Eamon de Valera is outside of this country. So we mention a lot of concepts, and hopefully it sparks a little bit of curiosity in people that they can look it up and find out a little bit more.
We got a huge response to our Hot Gale Summer episode, which is a couple of weeks ago. It's very quickly risen the charts in terms of one of our most listened episodes ever. That's when we just looked at some of the hot takes about Irish during the silly season, or just during in general, in the way the Irish language is discussed in the Irish media. And it was great to have so many people say, you know, and agree enthusiastically with it, or find it very rewarding, or find that it opened their minds to things, to parts of the conversation they hadn't really kind of given full attention to before.
Yeah, and the sound Garradine made was hilarious.
It was a great sound.
Because that was your text tone.
So thank you, Jessica. The next mail is going to be from Christopher.
Dear Eve to all the team. Just watched a Netflix documentary called The Great Hack, and I would love to hear everyone's opinion on it, as it was mental to hear about the connections between Donald Trump becoming president August Brexit. P.S. Your books are fantastic, Eric. Keep up the great work and loving the podcasts. Gaurav Mokgot.
Have you seen The Great Hack?
It's amazing. It's terrifying, but it's amazing.
It's absolutely incredible. And, you know, when I first saw this email, I was thinking, like, you know, what has that got to do with a podcast about words? And then I remember this one scene that sticks out. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Dominic Cummings in the BBC dramatization of, you know, of all of this happening. And The Great Hack refers to the same scene where they just decided to change the wording of the campaign. And instead of take control, it was take back control.
Mm.
And the importance that one word had around the Brexit thing. And it's like, it's incredible. We rely so much on social media to market the podcast and to talk to people. A lot of people only get the access to this podcast through social media. They click on Twitter links or whatever. And yeah, it's kind of scary how it can be weaponized for, you know, for personal gain or for, you know, incredible financial gain. It's a scary, scary thing. If anyone has not seen The Great Hack, go see The Great Hack. It's
definitely
fantastic.
Definitely watch it, definitely. I mean, I suppose it kind of showed nobody is immune to anything on the internet ever. You know, realistically, like, it's all well and good to sit there and say from a distance, oh, well, you know, I wouldn't have voted to leave and this, that, and the other. But realistically, there are people who were swayed. And I don't know, I suppose, like, I came away feeling a little bit more empathetic or empathic, I guess, towards people. You know, because everything was so controlled. It was, honestly, it was terrifying. It really was terrifying.
It's funny because I've received some correspondence, questions kind of from people wondering why Ireland as a English speaking country has managed to duck some of this, some of the movements that are happening in Canada. And America and Australia. It's important to mention that an awful lot of alt-right stuff has actually kicked off in Canada. They've Justin Trudeau isn't actually necessarily from that side of the house. The fact that Jordan Peterson and the first incel, the incel movement began at the University of Ottawa, and a lot of these things are kicking off in English first countries. And
this is the real danger of social media. Like, you know, that like groups like incels who have always existed. Like, people have always existed who have had this tremendous frustration with society and have blamed other people for their own self-inflicted problems. But now they're networking online, and it's just scary. Like, we've seen it here. We've seen it here, and we've even discussed it on the podcast here. You know, people trying to utilize the Irish language or Irish culture or Gaelic culture and trying to make it about white power and trying to, you know, rally outside Google offices and throw up straight arm salutes and things like that. Like, this is happening. These people are real, and they are emboldened by the fact that they can speak to each other on social media. So, yeah, scares the shit out of me at times.
Mm.
It is a bad thing. But it's certainly the Great Hack is something I'm looking forward to watching myself, and glad to see you both found it so interesting, and we can certainly pass that on to our listeners.
Yeah, so we'll do a podcast about it as soon as Derek's seen it, because he's the only one who hasn't. I just thought you'd done your due diligence, you would have got this lovely email in, and I thought you would have watched the fucking program.
You try writing a weekly column and a third book.
I'm so busy. I'm a successful podcaster.
Where's the tiny violin? No. In all seriousness, no, Derek is very busy. He works really hard.
Thank you, Clodagh. I can always count on the D14 posse to stick up for me.
Oh, that's what it
D14.
Is.
D14?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Whoops.
D6W.
Classic.
For shame.
Iconic.
You have to do an episode about postcodes for everybody listening in. We should do an episode about postcodes because we have the worst postcode system in the universe.
Oh my God, no. In all seriousness, anecdote time, my postman actually crossed out like the air code on one of our packages and wrote, "We don't use air codes," before like shoving it into like our letterbox. It was honestly, no, that has to happen in an episode.
Yeah. The postmen and postwomen hate the air codes because I guess so much there was, they took great pride in the local knowledge they needed to to circumvent the complete lack of postcodes before it became a badge of pride.
Yeah, because like they were brilliant. Like if you just put down somebody's full name and their address, so long as they were not brand new to the area, the postman or the postwoman would have it there.
Mm-hmm.
My mom tried to send a Christmas card to my in-laws 1 year, and she didn't have an address, but she knew the general area that they were living in. So she put down the O'Reilly family, Cooley, County Louth. And I think it was the 17th house it arrived at was the right one.
So, because we'll probably get, I know Carl Kinsler has written very beautifully about the postcodes before.
I'll get Carl back on. Yes. Because that would be class.
One of his famous chat up lines was, hey, girl, are you from 116W? Because I'd like to be tearing your clothes off.
Maybe not get Carl back.
In fairness, since Carl was on the show, he's gone from strength to strength and is one of the most exciting and interesting columnists in Ireland.
Oh my God, did you read his column about Krispy Kreme?
No.
Oh my God, it's amazing. It was like, it's like from a year ago. It's from, do you remember when like they opened the Krispy Kreme, the 24-hour donut shop?
Oh, Jesus,
and
yeah.
People were beeping their horns at 3 in the morning because they were excited about getting donuts. Carl wrote about donut fever hitting Blanchardstown and how the Krispy Kreme shop had to go from 24 hours to regular opening hours because as a nation, we couldn't handle that much access to donuts. It's one of the best, funniest things I've ever read.
Oh, God.
Google Carl Kinsler donuts. You'll find it. It's hilarious. It's brilliant. It's one of the best things written in the last 12 months. And
amazing.
It's fantastic.
Krispy Kreme is the best performing. The one in Ireland is the best performing one in Europe.
And if you read Carl Kinsler's column, you'll find out why.
There's a... And this is before, a couple of years back, the Domino's in Tallaght was the best, most profitable Domino's in Europe.
Wow.
But sometimes these figures are misleading because this means you need to open a second one, lads. Anyway, we are now going to look, we are going to receive a message from Carl.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Before I get into my questions for the podcast, I just want to ramble a bit about my experience with Irish. Very sorry if this ends up being way too long. If it is too long, feel free to just skip down to my questions at the end, both of which still make perfect sense without the context of this rant. When I was at school, Irish was my worst and least favourite subject. I absolutely hated it. I felt like I was being forced to learn it, and being a cynical brat, I've always had the attitude of, I'll never need it, so why should I have to learn it? Irish classes stressed me so much that as soon as I dropped from Honours Irish to pass, my frequent nightmares about coming to school with no work done stopped entirely. Now that I'm a bit over a decade out of secondary school, I found myself revisiting a lot of things I decided I didn't like as a child or teenager, only to discover they're not actually so bad. Mushrooms actually taste okay, and I may actually like cabbage far more than the average person. Where I used to hate watching stupid sports ball and question the point of them taking up so much space on the telly and in the newspapers, I now have a season ticket for Clare hurling matches. A fair bit of music I thought I was too cool for as a teenager, I was definitely not too cool for it, is actually really fun. And there's some amazingly talented songwriters working in genres I used to not consider worth my time. After so many positive experiences of giving things another chance, I decided to take on one of my great childhood fears. I was going to give Irish another go. 3 months ago, I downloaded Duolingo and started trying to teach myself a couple of fuckle. I felt like I'd been tricked. One of the reasons I always struggled with languages in school was that they always felt arbitrary. Crazy irregular verbs, supposed grammar rules that aren't actually followed, spelling that doesn't align to pronunciation, and so on. Nobody ever told me that Irish was one of the best languages in this regard. Maybe I had poor teachers, maybe the curriculum was poor, maybe I just didn't listen. But I had no idea that there were so few irregular verbs in Irish. I had no idea about cuéilge cuéilge as lán lán, or how fadas actually altered the sound of the vowels, meaning I no longer had to totally guess at how things were spelled. I had no idea that there were rules with when to use shavu and oru. I'm still not great on this, but I now know there's an answer I can look up if I'm unsure. I had convinced myself for years that Irish grammar was hard, when in fact it makes way more sense than English does. I did not have the experience that people said I'd have, where I started remembering bits as I started to learn. I mean, I really was hopeless, and I definitely consider myself to be learning and not relearning the language. But despite this, I found the learning experience easier and way more enjoyable than I expected. All this to say, I really wanted to thank everyone involved in the podcast. Your discussion of the language has helped open my eyes to all the different ways the language can be used. Lots of different resources that exist for learning and practicing it. Lots of different Irish language media that people have created and I never knew about. I still don't think I'd like to try and learn Irish in the classroom ever again, but this podcast has helped so much with learning at my own pace. It's taught me about various Irish language media that I want to experience because it's of genuine interest, not just because it's Irish practice. The podcast has also just helped me to keep my interest up. Despite enjoying it, learning a language is still hard work that takes time, but having a regular podcast relating to the topic helps remind me why I'm doing it. Gramila Mahagav. Now, with my life story and that praise out of the way, a couple of actual questions for the podcast. Question one. I'm nearing the end of the Irish Duolingo course. While it's been great for getting me up and running, it's quite limited and I definitely need something else to keep me progressing. I've looked into TG Cahir and Orna G programs and some simple Irish language books, but it's difficult to find things that are simple enough for a relative beginner while challenging enough to help me reach a level above beginner. Do you have any recommendations for someone who is slightly more than a beginner, but still a long way from fluency? This could be learning tools, TV shows, radio shows, other podcasts, books, magazines, whatever. Question two. I was one of those cynical students who didn't want to learn Irish because I'd never use it, despite also happily learning other subjects I'd never go on to use. While I know this is something you're probably sick of hearing, I do wonder if there is something to it. Most people don't use Irish day to day. Do you think the Irish language can ever be in common usage outside of the Gaeltacht and outside of language hobbyists or enthusiasts, unless more jobs are created through Irish? Do you think there'd be anything to be said for a government grant for businesses that wish to operate through Irish, despite the inevitable backlash from newspaper columnists about wasted taxpayer money? Thank you very much for taking the time to read all this. Even if this email is much too long to read out on the podcast, I'm very much looking forward to your next mailbag episode. I hope your quantity of emails containing instructions for how to run your program or how to correctly utilise glottal stops in Nullag has reduced somewhat. Kind regards, Carl.
Hey, thank you very much, Carl. And I'm really glad that your life has brought you back to Irish and that we've been a part of that journey.
Yeah, it's brilliant. That's a really nice email. I'm really chuffed. Like it's fantastic to see people revisit the language because let's face it, school is for a lot of people, school is hell. Mm. You know, nothing you learn in school. I was not a huge history fan in school, but afterwards, love history. Read historical novels, you know, love reading about periods of history that weren't even on the history curriculum in school. Like it's fantastic. I mean, to Carl's questions, nearing the end of the Duolingo course and I'm looking for stuff. I would say, because you're in Ireland, visit your local branch library and see what kind of DIY courses are there. Some of them are fantastic. And the branch library network in Ireland is so good that if there is any book out there and your librarian will be able to help you find it, you can order it from any library in the country. It's fantastic. And that shit's all free. Like, it's absolutely amazing. Like, libraries are just incredible. I know I sound like I've just discovered the library, but I've been a big fan for many, many years. I always find it really, really funny. Like once a year, some influencer on Instagram discovers the library.
Oh my God, so cool. Terrific. Jesus.
Well, like libraries are class. And then our good friend Oscar Akira started this hashtag on Twitter. Highly recommended, DIY Gaeilge. Mm. And it's like there's stuff in there for all levels if you're in between or whatever. And then, and of course, like TG Cahir, you know, looking at the TG Cahir programs, it's good. I find that the English subtitles can be a little bit off-putting if you're trying to improve your Irish. So if you look at it on the TG Cahir player, you have the option of turning off the subtitles. And on some of their programs, you can even turn on Irish language subtitles, which is really, really helpful. Yes. And their online properties like Bluck and Mullscale are really good. Mullscale sometimes do bilingual subtitles, English and Irish concurrent, and that's really, really good for vocabulary and for even looking at sentence structure, it's really good. I don't know, any other ideas for Cahill's continuing self-education?
Something I found is, for something like that, it's actually good to, if you read like an article or watch something in English first and then watch it again in Irish, so watch it a second time with the Irish subtitles after watching with the English subtitles. If you mean it's a little bit of work, it's a little time consuming, but it's a little bit of commitment that is required to pull yourself to the next level. That's something that worked for me.
Yeah. Oh, Bjor Egan, the podcast. Yes. Bjor Egan, the podcast is really good. Just let it wash over you. You're not going to understand everything, but it's just fantastic content. It's brilliant. It's great to listen to, and you know there's a real buzz and an energy to it. So even if you don't understand it, you'll follow along pretty handy. And like the great thing about most podcast players, Spotify, Podcast Addict, iTunes, all that, you can slow down the podcast, listen to it at 3/4 speed.
Yeah.
It makes Shun and Sinead and Anya sound very funny. Because they're talking this slow. But but you can listen to it and it's a little bit clearer then. Yeah, it's good.
Your mindset, Cathal, as well, is definitely in the right place. I mean, I think that's such an important thing to remember, is that like Irish is not just what you hated in school. You know, like it really does extend. And that goes for any subject, in fairness, as, you know, Pater was saying about history, for example, as well. But, you know, yeah, it's great to hear people say that as well. You know.
Kyle's second question. Can Irish be used unless more jobs can be created through Irish? Great point. I mean, super point. And we are in the sorry situation, as we discussed in the Hot Gael Summer Hot Takes episode. The Gaeltacht is underinvested in compared to other areas. So places where Irish is the first language are suffering by comparison to places where it's not the first language. So people are migrating out of Gaeltacht areas and they're working in jobs where Irish is not the language of the job. There are some grants available for companies that want to have signage through Irish, that want to have materials through Irish, and they're very good. They're not used enough, but they're there. And part of the problem is that we are actually in an inverse position to the backlash from the newspaper columns about wasted taxpayer money. The taxpayer is saving money on Irish language and Gaeltacht employment because we're spending fucking less of it.
Yeah.
And I will take one issue with what Cathal has said. So there is something completely unforgivable in there. Mushrooms are fucking disgusting.
God, grow up, Pat.
I did exactly what Cathal did one time when I was in my 20s. I never liked mushrooms. I never liked the taste. And I said, I'm going to try mushrooms because I'm a mature individual now. I'm finished school. I was in college at the time. I was like,
you're sophisticated.
I am sophisticated. I have a refined palate. And they're rancid. They're absolutely rancid. They're grown in and you can taste it off them. They're disgusting.
To be fair, it is disgusting when you get a packet of mushrooms and like the dirt is like still on them and stuff.
Oh, you're supposed to wash them. I know.
I
know you're supposed to wash
them. Thank you
just,
for that.
Just in case. In case you hadn't tried that. Like.
God, first with the chicken up the nose and now like dirt off the mushrooms. It's a lovely show.
It certainly is. We are having a food related adventure. I personally enjoy mushrooms quite a bit.
I enjoy a mushroom too.
I wouldn't be mad about them.
But stadious.
No. Have you ever put a mushroom in a cuddle?
What? No! Would you put a mushroom in a stew?
Yeah.
Does it not become a bourguignon?
Beef Guinness stew or beef bourguignon, yeah.
But I mean, a bourguignon and an Irish stew are worlds apart.
But like, strictly speaking, spaghetti bolognese, like you're kind of stewing it in a way. Like
I wouldn't put mushrooms in a bolognese.
What?
All right, for a start, right? I have a serious issue with the sorry excuse for a bolognese we have in these islands, right? Because like, if you've ever been to Italy, if you've ever had what they call in Bologna a ragu bolognese, it's not a tomato sauce, it's a meat sauce. You cook the meat down until it's a sloppy paste and it's delicious. It's usually half pork, half beef. It's done with a lot of red wine and a little bit of tomato. But like here, we have this sweet, sickly, asinine tomato dish that is just, oh, when's your dal mio day? It's disgusting.
Some years back, I was in a house and we had there was an evening party. I had made a big pot of bolognese. I was putting it away, and there was a lawyer at the party. He said, "Oh, Joe, you make bolognese, do you?" I said, "Yeah, I did." He goes, "Did you use the three different types of meat? Because otherwise, it's not a correct bolognese."
A bit of veal, beef, pork, and veal.
This is what he's saying, and I was
"You got his number?"
I suggested basically putting him up by his ankles and putting him through a meat grinder, making him the third kind of meat.
Wow.
No.
Whoa. God damn.
I don't like people criticizing my cooking. I'm an amazing cook.
I see you too long for the secret and forbidden taste of human flesh. Just like Nevin Maguire.
Good. We love Nevin Maguire.
Allegedly.
And he's anyway, so but yeah, I think it's this guy. He arrived at the party, hands are hanging.
Oh, one hand as long as the other.
That's
not cool. Well, if you arrive to a party, you can't. There's a way around it. If you arrive to a party and you haven't brought anything, you've no gift for the host, you've no bottle of wine, you haven't brought your own beer or anything like that, there's a way around it. Like, there is a way, just go there and be cool. Like, just go there and be someone people want to talk to. Tom Cohen's like, oh, bolognese, is it? You're shit at bolognese.
At one point, he had been pouring a glass of wine. He drank it. And he
a glass of someone else's wine.
And then
hastened to add.
He held his glass out after his wine was finished. Like, isn't yeah, top me up. He didn't ask. He just kind of held the glass out.
Where is he today?
I
assume someone's murdered him. Like, it's like 50-50.
If there's any justice. Anyway, we have some correspondence from Dan Ander. We have some correspondence from Dan Ander, and we are delighted to receive this message from Nav.
Hi, Mother Folklore. I'm an Australian to Irish parent.
No, you have to do the accent.
God, no. Please.
Please do the accent.
Well, I actually...
No.
You do it every way.
Am I going to be harassed? Hi, Mother Folklore. I'm an Australian to Irish parents, and I've recently taken up Gaeilge. I found your podcast by typing Gaeilge into Spotify search engine and fell in love. Keep up the great content. Now, can we talk about Sylvanian families? Because no joke, in your episode 89, The Scythe Mind, yous were all on about them, but for the first 2 minutes or so, I swear yous were saying Slovenian families. For a solid moment, I thought there were a bunch of extorted Slovenian immigrants with large families. And some of them were owned and collected, even though they were too expensive. It all escalated to there, even being a risque Twitter account someone made of them.
That changes that tone completely.
I was shook and thought, I can't believe it. Modern slavery is alive today in Ireland. Sorry. I'm all rude again, huh? I was shook and I thought, I can't believe it. Modern slavery is alive today in Ireland. Those poor Slovenian families. I clued on after a bit and realised my mistake. Made for a great laugh, though. I love the podcast. Thank you for all the great crack. Oh, God. I couldn't get through that without laughing either now.
Hashtag free the Slovenian families.
Slovenian families. From Tomi.
I'm not sure if the Twitter account you're referring to is that like one where they put the really lewd captions over. Oh,
Sylvanian, over Sylvanian families.
Yeah. No, not Slovenian.
I don't know if there's one about lewd captions over Slovenian families.
I'll be.
There might be. No. Not big on Slovenian Twitter.
No, not yet.
I mean, we all need to seek justice for the Slovenian family.
Oh, God.
Great stuff.
Thanks, Nav.
we absolutely appreciate that. That's that was a really funny funny misunderstanding, and we are delighted you shared it with us. So moving, unless we have any more observations, moving swiftly on.
No, we're okay with that, thanks.
I feel like you found that the least funny. I feel like you were just like, what the f*** is this?
I thought it was very funny. Anyway, so we have a correspondence from, I used to know a girl called Avril. And her English friends called her Bovril because they had never heard of Avril before. And then they reduced it to Bov. And her nickname was Bov. Because it's like a bit. And I was always like, how did you get a nickname like Bov? But that's basically it. English.
So, yeah, okay. Never not at it.
Never not at it.
So this is not from Bovril. This is from a different Avril.
This is from a different Avril.
Okay. Dave, thank you all so much for Mother Folklore. I recently took up Irish again. With a sense of duty after watching Robert Key's Ireland, A Television History, which, if you've not seen it, I cannot recommend enough as a detailed and balanced view of Irish-English relations, and because of the convenience offered by Duolingo. These alone, of course, are poor motivation for learning a language, and I think had I not come across the podcast, I would not have developed a love for the language that some months on has given me the ability to spend at least part of each day bilingual. It's a wonder to have joy in something I previously only associated with punishment and penance. And I cannot thank you all enough. I've even taken Patter's example and started a local pop-up Gaeltacht in Norwich. I'm originally from Dublin, but have been living in Norfolk and married to an Englishman for a couple of years. We are learning Irish together and hope to move near on Rhine in the near future. My husband has even begun working on a payday-esque game, Os Gaeilge. I'd love to hear an episode about other Irish-English couples and how their cultural heritage plays into their relationship.
Mm.
I also wondered if you might discuss the idea of Gaeilge visas. I know of many people who have the linguistic ability and inclination to live in the Gaeltacht, but the need for a visa means they have little to no chance of it ever being a possibility. Also, in terms of boosting the Irish language, I wondered if you might mention and explain the Fáinne PIN system for all listeners' benefits. I know there has been a passing remark to them being the symbol of the annoyingly earnest, but now as Irish becomes less encumbered and more accessible, they could offer a simple solution for practising Gaelgors to meet and support one another, if they were more widely thought of. The show has mentioned the influence of English loanwords many times, and I wanted to add another way of creating new and fixing previously poorly incorporated words. I would suggest that if other methods are not fruitful, that looking at the Scottish, Manx or even Brittonic counterparts might be preferable before turning to English, Greek or Latin for inspiration. My husband and I, for example, have taken the Manx for toast, gredin, and use it as Gaeilge as gradin, instead of the very uninspiring toasta, with gradin being a toasty. That said, I know, thanks to Derek's wonderful Mother Folklore chapter on lost words, that many of the words we have recently created already have much older versions. Leach, of course, being the older word for spoon, which has been replaced by spoonog. I would so love a comprehensive dictionary of all these lost words, and all the words that simply have no translation in English. If you have any insight into exactly why so many words have been replaced by English with a fada, I'd love to know. I have a vague memory of it being associated with lazy standardisation in the 60s, but I'd love to know for sure. Apologies if this has already been explained. I'm often multitasking when I tune in, so I don't always hear every detail, but I've begun re-listening from the beginning. I've also just finished the book Mother Folklore and cannot praise it highly enough. I'm looking forward to now reading Crack Baby, but apologies if you there cover anything I've just said. Finally, I want to add that I particularly enjoy the Brehon and constitutional law episodes and would very much enjoy a dedicated channel on old Gaelic society and its modern implications if Emer and Garadine could be persuaded. I look forward to seeing all your names in the history books. Gormila Mahagui, Avril.
Well, that's absolutely lovely.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's great. There's a couple of really interesting questions in there and there's a couple of really, really interesting points. And it is great. It's great to see people learning Irish and, you know, it's a wonder to have joy in something I've previously only associated with punishment and penance. It's like finally getting into BDSM. You
know? Good grief.
It's like finally realizing there's joy in this, you know, there's happiness.
Well, I wouldn't say Irish is exactly like that. I mean, it's it doesn't have as many rules.
What's the safe word?
The safe word is like, cuteness.
Oh, God.
That would be a terrible safe word for a good bondage session, wouldn't it?
God. God.
You can't tell someone to be quiet.
Fun no mate.
Fun no mate.
Tommy Ray.
The safe word is Orcar. Gaelgor visas. Gaelgor visas was, what was the first question? Oh, I'd love to hear an episode about other Irish English couples and how the cultural heritage plays into the relation. That's class.
I've been looking into that. We had a really positive response to the Falling for Gaelgor episode.
Oh, that was great. That was Derek and Valerie.
And
so good.
Well, I was actually hoping for that to be the start of a series of couples where with an Irish speaker and someone, and I was always hoping to get an English person going out with an Irish speaker and how that either in the UK or over here to talk about how those things are.
So Gaelgor visas. I know many people who have the ability and inclination to live in the Gaeltacht, but the need for a visa means they have little or no chance of ever being a possibility. That's a good idea in theory, but then you look at the practicalities of the Gaeltacht right now and actually there's a tremendous difficulty in people who have been born and raised in the Gaeltacht actually getting planning permission and being able to build a house in Gaeltacht areas. So there's a lot that needs to be ironed out in terms of rural planning and how we occupy our Gaeltacht. Our Gaeltacht don't have enough towns for a start.
Yeah.
There's Maecullen on Spidale on Dangan, which is really, I mean, it's on the edge of the Gaeltacht. I don't know if it, like there's not enough of them where there would be housing estates developed. And then you're looking at one-off housing and the difficulty in getting one-off housing. It really, there's so many people who live in the Gaeltacht who have to leave because they can't afford to build a house there. They can't afford to live there. It would be great if we could encourage people to come and move into the Gaeltacht. But I think Gaelgor visas are a long way down. We need to sort out proper planning and all that. But it is a good idea that like you could sort of ease the visa process for someone who wants to come here to speak Irish, because it's the only country in the world where it's spoken in any areas as a first language. Mm-hmm. So with the exception of the Gaeltacht in Canada, big props.
Big props.
Big props. And then there was Simple Solution, Irish Language. Oh, the Fania. Yeah, cool. So, Fanias, right? Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I don't wear mine often enough because I only have one Fania and I forget which suit it's on. So, I have like 7 or 8 suits and I have one Fania. Mm-hmm. I don't move it around. And I don't have the same kind of problem with the Fania that people would have associated with it in the past. And it's kind of the Fania, the poor Fania was at one stage in the past completely beset on all sides of criticism because those who were raised and spoke Irish every day were like, why would I need to wear that? I'm not one of those Gaelgors, like, you know what I mean? I just speak it. And then other people are like, oh, it's one of them Gaelgors, like, you know. Mm. So when Gaelgor was a dirty word, the Fania was kind of a symbol for that. It's a small, if no one's ever seen it, it's a tiny ring that is on a pin that you wear in your lapel. You gold for fluent, silver for well able to have a conversation. And then there's a third badge, which isn't a Fania, and it's called Cúpla Focal. And it literally says that, Cúpla Focal. And it's a way of saying, I have Irish, I like to use Irish, and if you see me wearing this, please feel free to come up and address me in Irish. So it's a lovely idea. It's fantastic. I suppose... For many people, it's just it's a label,
yeah.
And there's a problem for many people with that. But I think Conor na Gaeilge have done some fantastic work in trying to normalize that. Like they've done some amazing work in trying to normalize the speaking of the language, but in trying to normalize the wearing of the Fania, they have an Instagram account, Humans of on Fania,
yeah,
which is really good. Where they just interview people like, oh, you're wearing a Fania. Why are you wearing a Fania? Tell me a bit about that, and that's really cool. I don't know. Do you guys ever wear one?
I don't wear one. And one of the reasons is that, I mean, I'm not mad on strangers walking up to me and talking to me, which is a real shame because there's sometimes when, you know, I'm pretty outgoing. But I think for me, the big thing is that is the idea that I'm ready to talk to anyone who feels like talking to me has never been my bag. And I know that's awful, but...
I mean, fair. Like, it's not, you know, I don't blame it at all. I don't know. I think, yeah.
I love when people talk to me. I love it. Come on up and talk. You ever see me on the street? Come up and talk to me.
See,
give me a hug.
You're an outgoing person.
Well, that's not well for some.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I just won't wear a Fania because I can't. Was there one more?
I think that's...
Loanwords.
Yeah, loanwords. I think the big thing with loanwords is there's... I think there's a cultural battle with loanwords, and that I think native speakers are quite happy to, are quite confident in incorporating them, whereas sometimes the ideas of purity are tend to be something that's associated with later converts. Would that be a fair point?
Yeah, it's a fair point in that, like, for a native speaker, for a first language Irish speaker, or for somebody who uses it fluently on a day-by-day basis, communication is the most important thing. So if I've, like, I love this idea of a gradeen being a toasty. That's a lovely thing. But like Avril and her husband completely understand that and they say that to each other. If I was to try and say it in a cafe, I'd then have to explain what a gradeen is. A good friend of mine, a good friend of the show, a good friend of the podcast, Russell Snuddick, is on a tremendous crusade to get rid of loan words and get rid of English influence words out of the Irish language. But the one stumbling block that campaign runs into is the fact that you have to explain what you mean using other terms. And when a language is about communication, you know, you walk into a restaurant in Connemara or in Kirkcaldy or wherever and you just go like, Tordum gradon Masha de Hulle, Shin mo ochelse toaste. Well, that's a lot longer than just saying Tordum toaste Masha de Hulle, which is so, yeah, I don't want to have 4 million conversations. but again, there is a sort of an incorrect assumption that the loan words we have are just English words with fadas on them or things like that. Actually, they do go right back to the root word of what you're trying to come across. Like, I remember there was one girl on Twitter years ago who said, I can't take Irish seriously because the Irish for microphone is microphone. I was like, yeah, but like the German for microphone is microphone. And like the French is le microphone and the Spanish is el microfono. And it's like... It's a
real monoglot move. To
yeah, well,
say,
it didn't all start in English. Like it all started somewhere else, and we all have our own version of it, you know. So there was a sort of a pushback, you know, that like instead of using a word like Uspidale, people would use the word Uherlin, which comes from Lun, meaning the building, and Uher meaning the patient, the building where the patients are. Now that's lovely, but then you realize that well, actually, we've been using the term Uspidale since the 12th century. So, you know, not all of these loanwords are new. They're not all neologisms and they're not all a sign of a weakened language. They're actually a sign of strength in a language as well.
Yeah, it's definitely, it deserves a larger discussion, but we are absolutely glad you brought it up. And I think we we have two more, one of which is slightly long, one of which is very short. Obviously, we've received a lot of the correspondence is very positive. We love that. But we are open to more a robust criticism and insights.
Yeah, come at me, bro.
We don't recoil from them. We certainly don't want to hide them. So I'm just going to this was posted online from on Debunkor. On Debunkor. So will I read?
I'll read it. Okay. Go real quick. Earlier this year, I wrote a post about the book called Mother Folklore. In that post, I stated that while I generally approved of Darragh O'Shea's book about the Irish language, I felt it was marred by some extremely sloppy research. Over the last week, I've listened to a couple of podcasts by O'Shea and the Mother Folklore team. The first one was a Halloween-themed post called The Vampirish Four. This podcast started well. It criticised the ludicrous claims made about the Irish origins of Dracula, which some fools have tried to link to an Irish phrase, Drach Ulla, supposedly meaning bad blood. He pours scorn on this claim and describes it as bullshit. Quite right, too. However, the podcast then shows the same lack of common sense and proper research, which made the book so unsatisfactory. I have dealt here with the false claims about Ávartach, supposedly a vampire chieftain who lived in a mountainous area of Derry. As I have stated here, the genuine story of Ávartach describes this evil chieftain returning from the dead. He's later killed with a yew-wood sword and buried upside down with a huge rock over his body. Starting about 20 years ago, a revisionist version of this story appeared, claiming that Ávartach demanded the blood of his subjects and that he was described as a Nia Varav and a Jarug Dooley. So this piece about Ávartach and O'Shea's podcast is basically a rerun of what was wrong with the etymological section of his book. There is one piece of bogus information denied, then a welter of ignorant nonsense lifted from untrustworthy sources without the least attempt to establish the truth. To be fair to O'Shea, it is a guest of his who recounts the story. Of course, I don't believe that Ávartach was a real person, but that's not the point. The point is that folklore is interesting and is a legitimate field of study with its own methodology. Embellishing and inventing to make the story quote-unquote better is not part of that methodology. There were other bits that were even stupider. Apparently Stoker's notes contain no books on Transylvania and no mention of Vlad Dracul. Nonsense! Stoker copied some information from William Wilkinson's An Account of the Principalities of Wallachia and Moldavia about Vlad III. He also set the first part of the book in Transylvania and makes it quite clear that his count isn't Irish. And if it's true that Stoker had a copy of P.W. Joyce's History of Ireland in his library, that is completely irrelevant because that book doesn't contain any reference to Ávartach or to any supposed Irish vampires.
Well,
yeah. For a start, I am livid to be described as just a guest.
You know, it's so shady of Undermacore. It's very shady of Undermacore to call you a guest. You are have absolutely been a central part of the podcast from so early on. I value you so much, and I value your research. And
I should point out, and it is. Very, very important that we point this out, that this is not an academic podcast. And if anybody wants to cite any stories that I tell on this podcast to go into a piece of academic literature without checking the sources, that would be wrong. It was a Halloween episode and I was telling a ghost story that, yes, I had completely and totally embellished. And that's because that's what you do with stories.
We've had huge interest. Our Halloween episodes are have been very popular, and we certainly after the first one, we said, please do another one. I remember we decided let's get together and let's do a ghost story set in Ireland. We found this one we thought was interesting. The fact that it's a ghost story meant that I wasn't that making sure that it was factually accurate. I mean, generally, you know, ghosts don't actually exist.
What?
And vampires don't actually exist. So
that's the first that I'm hearing about. Actually,
you know,
life is a lie.
So I mean, look, I'm not sure if on Dumbledore is it when he's doing his making clay pots at night, and Patrick Swayze comes up behind him and starts kissing him on the back of the neck. Maybe I don't know. Basically, yeah. So ghosts aren't real, and therefore ghost stories themselves often have a bit of the blarney in them.
Yeah, deliberately, like it was a ghost story. Like you invited me on the podcast to tell a ghost story, so I had one. I had a ghost story, and it was.
And I thank you for it. It was very entertaining. And
join me this Halloween for a thoroughly researched.
Yes. The next story.
It's really important. It's really important. Obviously. Accuracy is entirely and totally important. And when we're talking about very serious topics, we try and be as accurate as possible. And I completely take on board the debunker's criticism that this was not accurate because it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we've dealt with some very serious topics with appropriate seriousness. We've brought on significant experts. We have I've surrounded myself with people who are smarter than me, and it's been a very good decision. We have some phenomenal brains. Some of the people on the podcast are very incredibly modest about their academic achievements, but I'm
not, and I've none. I've achieved nothing.
Yeah, but we're going to finish with just one last piece of correspondence.
So this is our last piece of correspondence. We're going to end on a really happy note. This from @thatcrazyCJ, Christopher James. Mother Folklore podcast is literally the only thing getting me through work these days. Ah, that's lovely.
Thank you so much.
Are you going to see that as positive? I mean, CJ, seek some work-life balance, man.
Yes.
Like, yeah, get some, in fairness.
Get some work-life balance. But
take a walk on your lunch break, man. You know, take in the air.
Keep listening.
Yeah, keep listening to the podcast.
You were asleep.
Keep listening
to
the podcast. We are the only thing that matters to you now.
Work hard, listen to podcasts, sleep, work hard.
Don't even work hard, man. Don't even work hard. Just listen to the podcast.
Darn toot. So before we wrap up, I just want to thank you all for joining us on this on the motherfucker journey so far. I'm really looking forward to getting all together again for our 200th episode sometime in the near future. Thank you so much for your company and for keeping us going. We are just really grateful to come into your ears every Friday.
You the real MVP, listener. You the real MVP.
Yes, you are.
Excellent. So, until the next time, is a slán from me.
A slán from me.
And it's a slán wemshe.
Catch you later.
Mother Folklore is a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network and comes out every Friday. You can send queries, comments, suggestions or feedback to motherfolklore@headstuff.org.
Thank you very, very much, as always, to Kirsten for the art and Brian for producing the show.
Come see us at the Cork Podcast Festival on Sunday, October 13th at 4 p.m. Check out Cork Podcast Festival on Twitter or online for more details.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Oh, if we'd ended it like at an hour exactly, it would have been like 100 for the 100th episode. Could have been like one. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, but except it's 60.
I know. It looks nice.